This episode of Rock on the Money is brought to you by AflexTV.com. All right, here we go. Welcome, rock stars. From Rockland USA Studios in Washington, D.C., this is Rock on the Money. Time to talk about your saving, investing, and protecting all of those hard-earned monies. We're here to give you ideas, answer your questions, keep you updated on your path to retirement and financial independence. I'm Craig, your Dave Ramsey Master Financial Coach, along with Amanda, our in-house lawyer and real estate agent. And we're so grateful you've joined us. Call or text our hotline 24 hours a day, 989-888-ROCK, 989-888-7625. Check us out on Facebook at Rock on the Money or our website at rockonthemoney.com. How's everything going on the home front?
Oh, not too much, Craig. Same old here. Groundhog's Day in isolation. How about you?
Same old thing. I need to buy more pajama bottoms. That's my priority at this point.
Thank goodness we're not on video for this.
No, actually, I'm all dressed in a suit and tie and... I'm being a real bum. I'm enjoying this.
I saw you cut your own hair. How'd that go?
It took a while. It's not perfect.
Well, my sister, who's a hairstylist, she's actually selling hats that say "Mind Your Own Roots" to help raise money to support her stylists who aren't able to afford their chair rent this month. So.
Well, as of recording this podcast, which was just a couple days ago, in the South, they're opening up, even here in Maryland, opening up the salons.
Wow.
I know. This is like breaking news as we're recording this. So like Georgia, South Carolina, Maryland. Now, in Maryland, you have to be one of the, what do they call it? Essential workers. Right. They're the only ones. So only one person's allowed in the, I don't know what you call a stylist or salon, whatever, at a time. Yeah. So only one at a time. But in the South, they're like opening up theaters and everything. Florida, everybody's so...
Well, I wouldn't follow Florida's example for anything, really.
Well, they said what the WWE is essential, so...
That's right, right.
Yeah, we can trust them. Hey, what do we got on this show?
Well, we've got a caller question from Wendy in Pennsylvania. Ooh. And a couple other social media questions that we will address. And then our topic today is about your retirement number. Mm. And then we're going to wrap it up with a savvy savings segment on funeral costs.
Funerals?
Yeah.
Well, it's a little morbid.
Only two things in life are certain, taxes and death. And we've already talked about taxes.
You know, though, I mean, that's actually a great topic because you can save a ton of money with funerals. That's right. I mean, it is.
And, you know, a lot of people are going through, unfortunately, a lot of people are going through, those decisions right now. So it's time.
Yeah. I'm going to be interested in how you want your funeral. So
it's pretty simple. Burn me and then, toss me.
It sounds like we're both in that same camp. I think they sell a cardboard box, right?
Yeah.
Something like that. So whatever. Whatever can put me in the oven, I'm good. Hey, we got a social media question. We got Wendy from Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Hi, Craig and Amanda. This is Wendy. I had called a couple days ago about a question on when I retire as a teacher to take a lump sum or the higher amount. And then I heard Amanda mention on yesterday's show that perhaps we should give more detail. It is a second career, so I won't be depending solely on this. I'll also be depending on Social Security and the savings I have in, on the old IRA, my Roth IRA, which is my main saving vehicle, and saving about $23,000 a year for the next 10 years in my 403B after tax. But the difference is the amount, the lump sum at this point, the estimate as I will get was just under $200,000. And the difference in what I would get per month is if I took that money out, I would get $3,150 a month. And if I leave that money in, I get $4,312. It is for the rest of my life, but there is no cost of living increases in that pension. And it is in Pennsylvania's state pension, which is very underfunded, more than most state pensions are underfunded. So that part might play into it. Thank you.
All right, Amanda. So we have a teacher and she wants to know if she should take a lump sum for her pension or take the payments until she dies.
Yeah. First of all, Wendy, thank you so much for providing those details. That's really helpful. So Craig, I would lean towards the lump sum in this situation, particularly because of the factors she shared. The one that really raised a red flag for me was that the Pennsylvania state pension is underfunded. Mm-hmm. So I personally wouldn't feel comfortable relying on that. The good news is it sounds like she's not relying on this as her sole retirement fund. She also has done a really nice job funding savings, a Roth IRA, sounds like a 403b after tax, which is terrific.
She's on it.
Yeah, so that's also basically in the Roth category. And Social Security, which I would put in the same category of, I don't know if I'd rely on it, but it sounds like at her age, she's probably closer and in a little bit more likely category that there might still be Social Security. Mm-hmm. I would take the lump sum and I would invest it myself. I don't like having the pension, the idea of a pension not being funded long term.
I totally agree. And how they come up with this payment, usually this is the formula that they use. So they take the series of payments they're obligated to pay to you, and they figure you're going to die between 67 and 78. There's going to be a lot of death in this podcast, apparently. Mm-hmm. So they figure that out, and then they back it all out and figure it on an interest rate of 7 or 8%. And that's how they came up with that lump sum. Right. So I totally agree. And if you take, 95% of the time, you'd be right by taking it out, rolling it into an IRA, and getting more than that 7% over the long term. And here's the other thing. When you die, a pension dies with you. Right. So if you plan on leaving it with anybody, that's not going to happen. But if you do it this way, by taking the lump sum and investing it at 8 to 10%, you can also leave that to your heirs in the future.
That's a great point. Craig.
That way, the money doesn't die. You end up with a plenty of money in the future. Plus, she's done so well with all these other investments. She's rocking. She's a rock star.
Yeah, I love the fact that she's diversified in other retirement funds as well.
And she said she wasn't relying on this money, so I would definitely roll it over. And then, of course, Amanda, you're the queen of IRAs. You got 8,000 plus mutual funds to choose from. I mean, obviously, we want you to start out with the index fund till you figure that out, which is better. But you can easily get 8 to 10% long term with your IRA and make more than what they're going to do in the pension fund. As a person who has a pension, I don't trust pensions whatsoever, especially with what we're going through right now. There's a lot of underfunding that's going to happen. There's budgets everywhere that they are getting nothing right now. There's hardly any sales tax. There's no real estate. I mean, it's going to be pretty bad. So I feel for all these governments, but remember, they're also ones funding these pensions. So
that's right.
If you can get the lump, I'd take the lump. Seriously.
I would too. Yep. Yeah. I would too.
I see.
All right. So we have another question.
Yes.
My wife and I have been doing Ramsey Plan for 5 months now. Today we completed baby step number 2.
Woohoo! Congratulations.
Yeah, wow. We decided to stick with the original plan through this since both of us have stable jobs. My wife is a nurse educator. Now on to baby step 3.
Yes.
Do you have any recommendations on where to put our emergency fund money where we can still access it in case we need it, but somewhere it will grow faster than a traditional bank savings account? Thanks again for all your help.
Well, remind everyone, baby step 3 is saving 3 to 6 months of your monthly expenses in case you lose jobs, which a lot of people are discovering that right now. So,
and the only way to know your monthly expenses is to know what your budget is.
Yes. And we have about 20 million episodes talking about the budget. So we have the ways to do it. And we have stuff we can give you to help with that. All the online banks will give you about, 1.7, Amanda?
Well, no, now it's down to 1.55.
Oh, my goodness. But it's still better than your local bank.
It's way better than your brick and mortar bank or your traditional banking institution. The online institutions have lower overhead, so they are able to offer you higher rates of return, generally speaking. So Ally is a great option. I personally use Marcus by Goldman Sachs. Mm-hmm. There are others out there, but as Craig mentioned, the going rate today is 1.55%.
And they are insured.
They are FDIC insured, just like every other bank. The reason I like them, well, first of all, of course, is the higher yield interest rate. Mm-hmm. But it also takes some small effort to get your money out. You can't just go and just withdraw it from an ATM. For example, I have to actually transfer it into a different bank account and then use it. And that takes a day or so. It's not long, but it also means that you can't just immediately on an impulse spend it.
It's probably a good thing.
It is. Yeah. And there's not going to be. And so I would say in addition to that, I also just keep a very modest amount in a really accessible savings account with my main bank. So it's like $500, generally speaking, nothing extravagant at all. And that's usually enough to cover any true emergency that can't wait a day or two.
Perfect. All right. So our topic today is our retirement number.
What do you mean, number, Craig? I thought we got to pick what age we wanted to retire.
I'm glad you've asked because I have, I would say 90% of the people that come to us for coaching, all are going to retire at age 65.
Oh, really?
That's what they tell me. I'm not doubting them, but you know, a lot of people, I think I grew up thinking the same thing, that you just grow up and, 65 is what the government says I retire. Everybody says 65, so you just retire.
Magic.
No, guess what? That's not necessarily the case. And this is what we coach. We've been saying this since day one. Retirement is not an age. It's a number. And what is that number, Amanda?
That's the amount of money that you have saved in your retirement accounts that's going to support your lifestyle between when the day you retire and the day you're no longer on this earth.
Wow. A lot of death going on. Yes. So we need to have money saved, and then we're going to take little parts of it over time to live on. Because there's at some point we're not going to be able to work, but we're also not going to be able to work. And I can't imagine what would be worse than being to the part where you can't work anymore because you're so old and then you run out of money. That right there is probably, being honest, one of my biggest fears.
Is running out of money? Yeah.
I actually think about that. I'm like, man, could you imagine if I was 85 and I ran out of money? What would you do? That's scary to me. I don't know why I'm obsessed with that. It's enough to drive me to invest and save and put off things and not buy big things and stuff like that. So anyway, we're going to talk about that number, that target that we want to get to, okay? So the media and everybody out there is trying to paint what a millionaire looks like. I mean, Amanda, you, growing up, what did you think a millionaire typically was? Before you were educated in money. I mean,
well, frankly, growing up, I didn't know that millionaires even existed.
Well, okay.
We didn't even have, well, we had a television when I was a little older, but it only had 5 channels.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah. And not a lot of programming even showed millionaires. So I guess I thought at some point oh, really rich people drive fancy cars and have mansions. You know, my dream is to have a castle someday, Craig.
It is. Not it says is. You can't.
I want a bedroom in a tower with a spiral staircase.
Wow.
And a dungeon.
Well, I don't want to know. Okay, let's get a little deep there. I don't care about the dungeon part.
And maybe a moat.
So people that save their money, they did a study. 67% of wealthy people out there stated that they weren't actually going for the wealth when they were saving their money to build up their nest egg. They were actually looking for that freedom, the freedom of worry.
Yeah.
The freedom security. Of not, right. And not to be concerned about money every day. Like when the stock market drops, do they have to worry?
Right.
I mean, there is actually a number that you can reach. It's not, well, I guess it's relative whether you think it's a big number or not. Whatever that number is, if it dropped 20%, like the stock market, does it change your life or not? You know what I mean? So we got to figure out what each of our numbers are, because everyone's number is going to be different. And I like to call it a target. It's like, I need to get to that number. I don't know what it's going to take. We're going to help you figure that out.
In order to buy a castle.
with a spiral staircase that leads to a dungeon.
Yes.
So I actually have one person.
Oh, you know what, Craig? I did know about a millionaire because in 1989, when the Batman movie came out, I knew that Bruce Wayne was a millionaire and I liked his castle, his mansion / castle.
He had a cool car, too.
He did.
Yes, he did.
Car.
All right. So I
and all those wonderful toys.
Yes. And he had a dungeon.
Exactly.
A bat cave.
Now I'm realizing that all of my fantasies originate from Batman.
Came from Batman.
That's right.
It's pretty dark. So I have one person that I've been coaching that has currently 14 rental properties. And most of them are actually paid for, and they're generating income, rental income. Okay. We discussed that, about the pros and cons of that, like people can't pay the rent right now, stuff like that. However, he only has $120,000 in retirement accounts. So
how old is he?
I can't remember. I think he's in his late 40s, early 50s.
Okay, that would scare me.
So what I was trying to explain to him, I said, well, you can't really eat the houses. If you need food at some point when you get up to, you know, your later years, when you're done, you could actually keep some of those rental properties to keep some residual income coming in. And that could be your part-time job taking care of that. But you have to sell some of those off because you might need the cash. And that takes some sitting down to figure all that out, because I don't know the values of these houses, which are the older ones, whatever. I mean,
you don't know how much rental income is coming in every month. But with 14, I imagine it's a generous passive income.
Yeah, that would take 1 or 2 hours to sit down and lay everything out and figure that out. I mean, but anyway, I said, remember, you can't eat the houses. You know, you need to actually have money in an account somewhere. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so here's a generally accepted method, the current one, Amanda. There's been a couple that have flown around, but this is the newer one that's out there, which I kind of side with a little bit, of determining what your number is. And it's based on, remember, that budget that you've always talked about.
That's right. You need to budget.
Somehow saving 25 times whatever that monthly budget is, or whatever that retirement spending budget's going to be.
You mean annually, not, you said monthly. So oh, you I'm mean sorry. 25 times your annual budget.
I'm old. I'm getting close to retirement. So so if you take your monthly retirement budget times 12, come up with That's your right. annual, then multiply that by 25, that would be a good target to have. That sounds crazy, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sounds generous.
Yes. So all this is apparently based on the Trinity study, which they examined another method where we're going to talk about here in a second. But the Trinity study discovered that whether you have 100% stocks, you know, like the S&P 500 index fund, or a mix of 70% stocks and 30% bonds, and you had a withdrawal rate of 4% on your gains per year, that would last you in excess of 30 years.
Okay.
So I actually know people that bump that up higher because that scares them and they have the same fear as I do. Nobody wants to run out of money. That's just...
Yeah, I don't want 30 years. If I retired and what... Yeah, I don't know if
I don't think that would last. My family tree lasts to be 100, so that wouldn't make it for me. Unless I keep going to 7, which I probably will. I know people that do 30 times because they're afraid of running out of money. And they will even lower the 4% down a little bit, down to 3. Dave Ramsey has a different thinking in the way he works. And I think it's a little, I don't know, I'll let you tell me what you think. It makes me nervous. I'm not disagreeing with him. I consider it, but it just makes me nervous. Here's what he talks about. So Dave believes in being able to live on 8% of your nest egg instead of 4%.
Okay.
So for this to work, your account must continue to average a 12% per year long-term average in returns. Okay. Even in retirement, you don't back it off. You guys stay full in on the stock market, and that would help you cover the inflation rate of the high side of 4%. You know how we talk 1 to 4%?
Yep.
So in that example, if you want to live on $40,000 a year, you would need $500,000 saved. And to do that, You would take the amount you want to live on and divide it by 0.08, which is 8%. And that will give you the amount you need to save. Uh-huh. So that's how we come up with that. To me, that makes me really, really nervous. I don't know why.
Well, let me just do the math here. Let's see. Mm-hmm.
Carry the five. Six.
Oh, yeah. It's about half.
Yeah, it's 4%. It's an 8% withdrawal rate. The way I like to do it is for every 40,000, you need a million, which is the 4% withdrawal rate.
Oh, that makes sense.
So if you need 80,000, you need $2 million saved. So so that's my quick math one. You need 40, you need a million. But well, he does half.
No one's going to be upset if they saved more than they need.
No. But I would caution people. So
let's make sure we overshoot rather than undershoot.
But if you look into your account right now, I guarantee you 99% of the people listening right now don't make 12% in their account on average long term.
Yeah.
So think about that, people. If you want to do that, your account better be much more aggressive than it is now. And mm-hmm. somehow you got to figure that out. And you got to do that in retirement. You're not backing off, like we say, into a target date fund 10 years of your retirement. So,
right.
Anyway, that's just something to consider. I personally don't like it. I would opt to have more. So how are we going to get there, Amanda? Well, we have the baby steps.
Of course.
We need to. Now we need to pay off all of our consumer debt. Mm-hmm. We need to have our emergency fund, because if you have an emergency fund, you don't have to dip into your retirement savings to handle that emergency. That is so crucial.
When issues come up, and make sure that emergency fund is in a high yield savings account. Mm-hmm.
That is so crucial, guys. You got to have that emergency fund. I know it's boring to build it up, but now you need to save initially 15% of your paycheck every single time. And keyword is initially, because we're going to come back to that. You're going to pay off your house, right? Mm-hmm. Because going into retirement, I would prefer people to be completely debt-free. It's a lot easier if you own everything.
Yeah, not just your house, but any of your rental properties as well.
Oh, there you go. Listen to the realtor. So once we pay off the house, we're going to revert back to saving money. So that means we go back to baby step four, and now we're going to max out the 401k or the IRA and then get into other investments. But we still need to figure out what is that target and how much of that money is going to take to hit that target. Okay. Mm-hmm. So like I said, so here's one thing I did. I went over to NerdWallet. I'll put the link in the show notes. It's a simple calculator with pretty graphs and stuff. And it's one that I like. It doesn't require a lot of information to come up with a number, but it gives you a ballpark. So let's say we need $80,000 per year to live on. We want to retire on $80,000 a year. Okay. So the target number would be, what I say, $40,000 per million. So it'd be $2 million. Your monthly salary is $5,000. The government's going to take out 28%. That's $1,400. That leaves you with $3,600. To reach that target, Amanda, mm-hmm. you would need to take out another $1,600 a month, leaving you $2,000 to live on. Now, remember, we've already paid off our debts.
Okay.
So what I did, I threw this in there in the calculator. If you are 35 years old, had no money, zippy, nothing, nada in your 401k IRA, nothing. And you're starting right there and all your debts are paid. If you maxed out your 401k by putting $1,600 a month into your 401k Roth, and you did that and lived on that money, that $2,000, by time you turn, what I say, 65 years old, you would have $4.56 million tax-free in your Roth account, which equates to $10,000 a month or $123,000 a year. That's a pretty good retirement, Amanda.
Nice.
A lot of people are going to now say, well, Craig, I can't put $1,600 a month into my retirement account. You don't know what it's like. Right. I can't live on $2,000 a month. Well, then I guess you neither need to improve yourself to get raises, promotions, which usually happen over time, right? Work a side gig, work another job, or even switch careers or switch to another job that pays you more. There's always ways to figure out how to make more money. You know what I mean? So it all depends on what do you really want? Do you want to hit that target or not? Wait, what's your target number that will get you a castle and a spiral staircase in this bat cave?
So I have a target, which is based more on my dream than probably reality, of this castle and traveling of between 8 and 10 million.
Whoa. You know, yeah. There's a couple of guys that believe 10 million is the number you should have. And that number wouldn't help you.
That sounds like the right number. So,
well, the argument for the 10 million, just like I've heard for the 5 million, is that if you have a divorce, cancer, major life things that happen, you could resist anything at that point.
Yeah.
Even if you got your money cut in half by a divorce, you would still have 5 million.
Right. Yeah.
So that's where I hear the argument at 10. So. Just
anyway, I mean, based on all the calculations, I probably don't need more than 3.
Right.
But the calculations aren't factoring in my castle upkeep. So.
Right. Oh, yes. And the butler and the pool boy and all that other stuff that comes with it.
I don't need a big castle, Craig. Just a small one. It just has to look like a castle.
Well, you need to get out of Florida because I don't think you're going to find them down there.
Funny you say that. There's along one of the streets nearby, there's a house that looks similar to a castle.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. But it's still out of my price range right now. Yeah.
Right now.
Someday I will be a princess in my tower.
There you go. All right. Anyway, I'm going to put a link to the calculator. I like this calculator. It's nice and clean. Beautiful colors and graphs, and it really gets you excited, and it's real simple, and they allow you to put the company match in there, which a lot of our listeners have. So put it in there, play with the numbers, and figure out what is it going to take to get to what you need. It's probably the calculator, I think, that matches up with what we're talking about the easiest without making it complicated. So all right, so when we come back, it's time to get gloomy and down the dungeon. We're going to talk about death.
Yes, funeral costs.
Funeral costs. Actually, it is a very serious situation. And you can, do they take advantage of you. Anyway, we're going to talk about all of that when we come back. Right here, Rock on the Money. This episode is sponsored by AflexTV.com. AflexTV.com is a television streaming service that gives you full access to over 3,000 live TV channels from around the world. This includes cable networks, sports, music, pay-per-view, and so much more. You also get access to new and just released movies, TV shows, and sports. Simply go to AflexTV.com, download the app, and you're up and running. They even have a TV guide, which is easy to use and similar to the cable guides you already know. Aflex TV is compatible with your smartphone, Fire Sticks, tablets, smart TVs, and Android boxes. And right now, you can try Aflex TV for free, and there's no credit card required. Go to AflexTV.com now and try it out today. That's AflexTV.com. The Money with Amanda and me, Craig. Don't forget, you can call us. We're taking your questions by phone. We love playing your voicemails.
That's right. Even like we did with Wendy today.
Even if you have a question or even a comment, you just have a comment, something you don't like, or you have a different thought on something, we'd love to share it with everybody. 989-888-ROCK, 989-888-7625. Two, five. On to Savvy Savings, Amanda.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about funeral costs. Like I said earlier, there's only two things in life that are certain, and that's death and taxes. Mm-hmm. We've already spent an episode talking about taxes, as riveting as those are. So I thought we'd spend some time talking about expenses that go along with the passing of a loved one. So funerals can cost upwards of $27,000, according to the National Funeral Directors Association. Even the least expensive funerals still hover around $2,000. So even that cardboard box, Craig, that you're talking about.
Yes.
the average funeral cost is around is between $7,000 and $12,000. So just ballparking it, you can plan on about $10,000 in funeral costs. That includes the viewing, the burial, basic service fees, transporting remains to a funeral home, a casket, embalming, and other preparation. The average cost of a funeral with cremation is $6,000 to $7,000. So you do save the money there. Those costs do not include a cemetery, a monument, marker, or other things like flowers in either case. And caskets and urns can cost thousands of dollars alone, depending on the style and the material used. Craig, did you ever see that HBO series, 6 Feet Under?
Yes.
Yes, I love that. That was great. And it's available streaming now on HBO On Demand or whatever for your free trial. But they had a funeral home there that they were running, and it was interesting to see some of the behind the scenes.
Yes. I've had friends that worked at funeral homes too, so.
Yeah. Who did?
Firefighters apparently like to work at funeral homes as a side gig. I don't get it either. It's weird, but go ahead.
What kind of gig do you get there?
They wear their suit and welcome the families, or they drive the hearse around.
I didn't know what was happening.
No, they go to the airport and pick up the casket and bring it over to the, stuff like that.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. They're not like, I don't think they're embalming. Anyway.
I think you need special schooling for that.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Well, so anyway, during this time of grief, families are often emotionally overspending by hundreds, even thousands of dollars when purchasing funeral arrangements. And this overspending is common for several reasons. You know, the emotional impact of losing someone can cloud your judgment. There are often pressing time constraints. You know, you only have so much time before you have to, and you have to make all of these decisions really quickly to pull it all together. Many on-the-spot decisions must be made as a result, and most families have no prior experience in funeral planning. Mm-hmm. Like, I certainly don't. You may have.
My father, I went through that, but that was my first exposure to it.
Yeah, I've never planned a funeral. Some funeral homes and cemeteries may take advantage of the situation and put profit ahead of saving the family money. I mean, these are businesses too. They're not charities. So while they are putting on an empathetic face, they're still more concerned about their bottom line than your grief. Yeah. And, you know, I've seen some people also feel compelled to make certain expensive decisions because they wouldn't want to, in their mind, dishonor the person who has passed away by, you know, chintzing out on something.
Right.
So how do you get around being taken advantage of? First of all, make sure you get an itemized list from the funeral home. I'm just going to use funeral home in a general sense here because that's often where these things are occurring. Don't just settle for a package cost. You know, that often happens where you just get a brochure and they're like, pick the gold, silver, or bronze package. And here's the cost and here's what comes in that package. That's a common marketing technique that's used in all sorts of industries. So it's not just something that funeral homes have developed. You know, you see it with photographers when you're planning a wedding and other areas. But in this particular case, it's important to get, usually all cases really, it's important you get an itemized list so that you can decide if that particular item in the list has the value that they've associated with that item. Don't let your emotions cloud your judgment. You can bring along a friend who maybe doesn't have a connection to the deceased to help provide you with emotional support and also pragmatic support in making those decisions. You also want to make sure you're shopping around for costs. The ease and convenience of letting a funeral home take care of all the details is certainly appealing, but it's also the most expensive option. you don't have to go along with the choices that they provide. So you could still have a service in a funeral home. But for example, Costco actually sells high quality caskets and urns at much lower prices than what the funeral homes charge.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you love Costco, Craig.
I've actually gone to the online Costco website and I've looked at them.
You did.
It's amazing how less expensive they are. There's some really, yeah. I was actually picking mine out because they got some real nice ones. They're only like $1,000 or $2,000 when you compare it to what they're going to charge you at the funeral home. And they have 24 hours shipping.
You're definitely going to be paying a premium at the funeral home. And Costco will deliver it directly to the mortuary, usually the same day you order it. So make sure you're shopping online.
Yep. I'm morbid like that when I shop. Good.
Yeah. Did you pick out like the Cadillac of caskets?
Oh man, there were some good ones on there. I think the most expensive one was $2,500.
So much for your cardboard box.
Well, yeah. We'll get
There's
to that.
There's also several websites dedicated to helping consumers find low-cost funeral services in your area. FuneralDecisions.com. Craig, can you put that in the show notes
for us? I'm on it.
That for one, offers free instant quotes online and lets users sign up to have funeral providers email them estimates directly. It's kind of like those online car insurance quotes.
So it's like LendingTree and all that? It's just, I just
apparently, yeah.
Have you ever done one of those, by the way, where you put in your information?
I think we did it for one mortgage and then, you get a lot of responses from
It was literally, as soon as I hit enter, was it like that for you?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh,
within
my phone
the same
blew up.
2 seconds, your phone's ringing.
Yeah. So anyway.
The Funeral Consumers Alliance also provides tips plus a state-by-state directory to organizations that help consumers save money on funeral arrangements in that area. So if you would rather not provide your contact information to funeraldecisions.com. And by the way, they're not a sponsor or anything. We don't get any kickback there. So I really have no horse in the race on whether or not you use funeraldecisions.com.
We'd be happy to take a free casket though, if they would like to be a sponsor.
I don't. Where would I store it?
They look comfortable.
Okay. All right. Well, now you can be the vampire in my castle.
Okay.
Okay. So the next thing is skipping embalming is an option. The median cost of embalming is around $700, but no state law actually requires it for most funerals.
Really?
So if you're having a one-day funeral, ask the funeral home if refrigeration is an option. It can mean significant savings, as funeral homes often charge only $50 a day for refrigeration. The other option you can look into is the actual location you're holding the services. So you could, instead of using a funeral home, you could look at places of worship. If your loved one is active in a church, a synagogue, or other house of worship, start by talking to their office about what the options are. Often there's no cost associated with having a service in one of these places, and many even offer the option of hosting a luncheon or reception at the same location if they have separate meeting facilities. I know I attended a funeral when I was much younger that was held at like a church, and then there was a potluck like in the basement, and that was a very economical way for the family to both offer a time and place for people to honor the person who had passed, but and then share in the festivities or share in breaking bread together afterwards.
I like that.
So consider a potluck is kind of nice to have everyone contribute as well.
Mm-hmm.
You could also consider donating to a medical school. You can donate a body to science as a cost-effective and compassionate choice. Staff from the school or research facility, make sure they're holding proper accreditation, will take care of pickup and transportation. After the testing is complete, the cremated remains are returned to the family. And all of this is done free of charge, and then you can feel good knowing that the research they perform will help further medical and scientific knowledge.
I definitely want to do that. I think that'd be cool. To be naked at a medical school and they're like chopping me up and do whatever they want to do. I think that's just, I don't know. I think that's awesome. I mean, when I was going through paramedic training, we used actual cadavers and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, looking at the organs and stuff like that. I mean, I believe in that. I love that.
Yeah, yeah. The other location you could think about is holding the service outside. So there's no rule that says a memorial service must take place indoors. Many people find tremendous comfort in remembering their loved ones surrounded by, you know, the beauty of nature. You could head to a park, a beach, or hilltop and conduct the memorial there. Just make sure that if it's somewhere that's public, that there's no local ordinance or permitting requirements for holding a large gathering, but all of those are great options, or you can even hold it right at the gravesite. And I did mention before the potluck luncheon, the costs associated with restaurant lunch following a service add up very quickly. You know, just like planning a wedding, right? Paying to feed a large group of people can be very costly. So you can instead ask those attending to bring a favorite dish and have a nice little potluck. And most people are more than happy to help. There is comfort in, you know, making food and sharing in communion there. And many would probably plan to bring food without you even having to ask as well. Now, I know during this COVID-19 outbreak, I've heard from people I know who've been impacted by a death of a loved one due to it, mm-hmm. that many of the hospitals are not allowing these types of choices, that you have, I heard the option is between cremation or liquefying a body, which I didn't even know was a thing.
Liquefying.
Wow. Yeah. So some of these decisions, depending on the circumstances, might be outside your control. And my advice there is just to make the best of the circumstance and continue to celebrate that life and honor that person with your family and friends to the extent that you can. In terms of costs, you would want to check and see if life insurance policy covers any of these costs, or if there's another insurance policy that your loved one had in place for these types of costs. What you should not do, however, in your own circumstances, you should not be prepaying for your final expenses. Mm-hmm. Your money is way better off in a bank earning interest or making money in an investment. One of the big risks you have with prepaying is that you are paying a particular funeral home. And like I mentioned earlier, these are businesses. So you risk that the business will go out of business long before you need their services. And then that money goes under with them. There's also no provision for relocation. So let's say you move out of state and now you have a contract and prepayment with a funeral home six states away. There's no way to transfer it to your new place. So I think it's a terrible idea to prepay. Instead, put that money into a dedicated account that is part of your will, with instructions on how to access that and what your wishes are.
And for all our Ramsey listeners, because we have a lot, because we're coaches, we don't prepay for anything unless you're right. Prepaying your tickets to Disney World or Fandango to go to the movie. We don't prepay anything for general reasons why you just said. You can make mm-hmm. more money in the bank and who knows what will happen to them. So we don't do that. Here's a little thing I want people to, while they're sitting at home looking at mm-hmm. reruns of everything. Have you ever seen the TV show from Penn and Teller called Bullshit?
I did not.
It was on Showtime and I had to beep out one of the words, so we're mm-hmm. legit. But episode number 22,
okay,
it's called Death Incorporated. What it is, mm-hmm. is they do like a 60 minutes style thing on different topics. Right. Mm-hmm. So they did one on death. And okay. they took undercover cameras into a funeral home and they pretended they lost someone and they recorded the sales pitch. Mm-hmm. And they talk about how, oh, well, your loved one would like this pillow or the mural of the right. Last Supper. They showed all that and how the caskets are arranged when you walk in. The cheap ones are in the back, kind of like mm-hmm. when you go to a grocery store. They talk about all of this and the whole history about death, the things to watch out for. And it's really, really interesting. Did you know the reason why it's called a living room in your house?
I did not.
I did not know this. Apparently, before funeral homes showed up, the living room was when someone passed, you put them in that living room and people came by to pay their respects.
So the living did.
Yeah. Well, the living come to see the dead pay their
exactly,
respect.
Exactly, yeah, in that room. So that
makes
sense.
The living room used, that's where the name came from. I did not know that.
You know what? Now that you mention it, I do recall hearing that before. So, and that makes sense. Remember, funeral homes are a modern development for convenience. Right. Mm-hmm. Funerals have been held in people's homes for many, many years, and it's still an option. There's nothing legally that requires you to hold it in a funeral home.
Right.
It's just culturally what we here in America tend to do.
Right. People get freaked out about that, so they don't want it in their house. So, but anyway, it's a great episode, and I encourage anyone to watch that. It really talks about everything Amanda mentioned and some other things because they go undercover, and it's really, really scary about how they take advantage of people at the worst time of their life. It's really sad. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, some of them are probably taking advantage. Others are probably just making the most of their business.
Yeah, I mean, it's their job. It's their business, and they need to make money.
So I'm not trying to imply that they're crooks or anything like that, but it's a situation where people are vulnerable and can make very poor financial decisions.
Very poor. Yes. Anyway, so you want to be cremated?
I do, yes.
I need to check in that Liquify thing. That sounds pretty awesome.
I've never heard of that, but I mean, my heart really goes out to this person that I know that, it's not a good situation
that's
happening. It's not good what's happening in this country right now. No. And aside from not being able to be with your loved one when they are passing away, to have to then make that decision is difficult.
Yeah. All right. That was really, really interesting and dark.
And dark.
We've learned a lot about Amanda in this episode. I just wanted to point that out. Dungeons and castles and princesses and... Anyway.
I think Roscoe would make a great castle dog.
Yes, he would. I can imagine. What kind of dog is he for everyone?
English bulldog.
Big, with his little short legs, just trying to make it up this staircase that you want.
Yeah, poor plus dog. The stone floors will be nice and cool for him to lay on.
Perfect. All right, Amanda, thank you for all that.
You too, bye.
Tune in tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel.
And as always, a quick reminder, check out our website, rockonthemoney.com. We have show notes, all the podcasts are located right there. The website turns into a player. You can play it right on your phone. Plus, there's links there so you can subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platforms, including Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and TuneIn. And if you could leave us a review and some star ratings on those platforms, it really, really helps us out a lot. Check out our Facebook group community with over 3,000 people in there. Facebook.com/groups/your401k. And also check out our Facebook page at Rock on the Money. So long, everybody. We really, really do have a lot of gratitude for you listening, sharing, and spreading the word. You guys are great. Amanda and I cannot emphasize how much we appreciate you guys. So long, and we'll see you again next week. Until next time, America. All opinions expressed by the host are solely their own and do not reflect the views of any company, affiliates, or advertisers. Investments or strategies mentioned in the show may not be suitable for you. Before acting on any information in the show, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial or investment advisor.